Good afternoon. It's 1:36, and I'd like to call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. We're in Butrovich, room 205. Today is Thursday, March 19th, 2026. Members present are Senator Tobin, Senator Rauscher, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome everyone to Senate Transportation. Please turn off or silence your cell phones and join me in welcoming our recording secretary, Heather Ramseth, and our LAO moderator, Kyla Tupo. Today, we will be hearing a presentation on the Alaska Marine Highway System. Here from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have Director Craig Tornga and Director Don Panone. Gentlemen, welcome back to Senate Transportation. Please state your names and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm Craig Tornga, the Marine Director for the Alaska Marine Highways. Okay, I'll go ahead. Go ahead and get started then. Okay, today I'm going to run through kind of a status of where we're at in the Alaska Marine Highways, the initiatives we have. And I'll tie that into our long-range plan. And what you see on this slide is our four focus areas of the long-range plan. I'll run through each one of these as we go through. So we just tie back what we're doing today to what we have in the plan. So our first focus area is provides a service that is safe, reliable, and connects our communities. It's a real focus on safe and reliable, and we want to be transparent with the information, our performance, the results, so people can actually see how we're performing. We'll track a couple key performance areas in that, and as we have safe and reliable service, we have better service for our communities. So here's our safety goal. Our safety goal is no harm. It's no harm to people, environment, and equipment. And here's our 2025 results. We did have 9 lost time incidents. The majority of the 9 was slip, trip, and falls. And our environment, we had no vessel spills or terminal spills to the water. We had 4 customer vehicle spills at the terminals. We were able to contain and clean up those before they got to any of the drains. We did have 1 spill at the Ketchikan maintenance warehouse where a drum rusted through and leaked on the bottom end and out the seam. And it did get in a storm drain where we had to boom off that storm drain and clean that up. We now store all the drums in secondary containment in the warehouse. And then on the equipment, we did have the elision with the Lituya when it hit the rocks at Annette Bay. And that happened just 2 days before the end of the year, this last year.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you both for being here. I just have a question on this slide where it says 4 customer vehicle spills. Who is responsible for paying for those spills? Is it the customer, or does that cost be incurred by the marine ferry?
At the terminal, they constantly walk up and down between the cars to see if anything's going on. And so those there, we cleaned up ourselves. We were able to, as soon as they see them, they try to contain them, especially when it's raining. And so they'll get around and then they'll get some absorbent pads out. Sometimes on the vessels, they get on and they have a spill. We do have some signs on there that they'll be responsible for cleaning up, and depending on how it goes. But 3 of those were at the Whittier terminal, and they're pretty good at walking up and down and spotting them. So.
Thank you.
Please continue.
And then for reliability, 2025, we had an uptime of 98.55%. We had approximately 35,000 hours with a 500 hours out of service. We did have 5 months where we had 100% uptime. And then 111 of our hours were when we had water in the fuel, contaminated fuel that was delivered to us. It took us a while to figure that one out, but we always sample the fuel before we take it. Now we sample every compartment before we take it, because that first compartment can be clean and the others will be a problem. And that's what we found out as we started sampling each compartment. When the next load, we did find that another compartment had water in it. So that's what took us out of service there.
Senator Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, so I'm wondering, what's the process there when you find out water's that the fuel's contaminated? What do you have to go through now?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Rauscher. It depends on what stage you're in when you find it. This one here got passed, and it was in the stage that going through the engines that ruined the injectors. And so we did have quite a bit of work to do, get the parts up and change them out. If you find it early enough, you can try to separate that out. And this vessel doesn't have a oily water separator, but most of the others do, and they can always run it through that and separate the water out from it as well. So this one here was to the point we had to, decant or get that water off the top and then clean to make repairs to the engine.
Follow up? Please. So I was wondering, is there any recourse on the amount of you pay for the extra added whatever you got added?
Through the chair to Senator Rauscher. Yeah, if we would have been able to discover on day one what the issue was, it would have really helped. But even the Coast Guard came down and we investigated together. There is a pipe that goes through that fuel tank that did have some contamination. We thought maybe that was leaking. We pressure tested all those. They were fine. We were really struggling to find the source, but through process elimination, we determined it had to come in and be delivered to us, because that was the day after taking fuel. So then that's where the chief decided, well, I'm going to test every compartment. And the next load, we did that, and we found in the third compartment, and then the supplier came down, looked at it all, and said, boy, I gotta look, see what's going on here. So they were after it. We haven't had a problem since, but that's our new process anyway.
Were you compensated?
No, not because we couldn't put the finger on it at the time, but right. it's yeah.
Thank you.
You bet. The next initiative here is improving customer service from booking to completion. And this slide talks a lot of the work that's gone into trying to prove that. We're nowhere near where we want to be right now. We got a lot more to do. We had a lot of, back when I began in the last part of 23, we had a lot of website errors. They didn't say, you'd get an error message, it wouldn't tell you what the error is. You couldn't figure out what you had to change. But our provider did come over two separate trips over from Denmark and walk through. We tried to replicate, and we did get that fixed, so it's a better experience there today. And go to the third bullet point there. We got the handheld scanner system going. That's a regulatory requirement for us to be able to produce a manifest real time to show how many people are on board. And we've had two unannounced audits of that by the U.S. Coast Guard, where they come on and demand a manifest, and we've now been able to produce that with the scanners. The IT group's done a great job on this. It took a lot of adaption of the scanners, working with our system provider on the reservations too, to make changes for our routes where we have multiple stops, dog walkers, everything else that needs to be put into that scanner. So it's going really good, to the point I visit the vessels now and they say, I like this thing. It makes my life easier. The second bullet point there, culinary training. We're doing a culinary training this year. We don't have a training program for our cooks and servers. We do get a lot of good compliments on the dining halls, like on the Columbia and the Leconte and the ones that have them. But we did get a complaint this last year on a question around, different ingredients, and you got to know the allergens, and a rule and training that needs to be provided to know the allergens, and we haven't provided that to our crews. So this here will give our servers and the cooks the tools they really need to be successful. So I'm looking forward to this program. We also, in the fourth bullet point, we've got a new vessel scheduling program. Ours is old, and it couldn't even be on the state server. We had to carry it around on a laptop. So if the laptop failed, we were out of the scheduling business. So this is great. Dom Steem, the IT group, worked on this for a good year or better, and now we got a good system in place for our vessel scheduling. And as you've heard on the next bullet point, we've got the Wi-Fi across, done a lot of upgrades. And then the next bullet point is talking about the networks, where we got some redundancy in the backups and for the different support the scanners. We've had to put, we've had to put different stations out at the purser shack so they can reach. But it's going well that way. And the last one is our initiative for this year. We want to get started. I don't think it's something we'll get completed, but it's getting a mobile app for the reservation so people can book and then use that as a boarding pass instead of having to go into the terminal and get print out a paper. We'll get that. So that's on the agenda for this year. This one here is gives you just a snapshot of our preventative maintenance module. This here is a dashboard that each vessel will see when they come up in the morning, and it'll tell them how many work orders they have out there to do. If it was overdue, you'd see a red line, and it'll tell them what's due next week. And see the green line, or I think there's 34 something tasks to do this week, and that just gives them that. And they, when you click on that green bar, it'll just bring up that list of all the OEM required maintenance items that have to be done. So this is just a good tool for the engineering department to be able to stay with the preventative maintenance and make sure we're getting it done. Our next area of focus is the fleet and terminal plans, making sure we design a fleet and have a fleet plan that is efficient for our operation. It's the bullet points here. It's modernizing the fleet an efficient fleet that's interchangeable, and then also having a standardization in the fleet and the terminals. So we get rid of what we have today with one-off vessels and one-off terminals that only this boat can go there or the other, so we can have some interchangeability. The first one is the Kennecott. We had the Kennecott in for 9 months last year. The requirement here was we were mandated to change out the 3516s, the larger generators that this had. They were inefficient. The problem is this vessel was designed as a spill response vessel primarily, and then secondarily as a ferry. And so they overpowered the generators just in case. And unfortunately, they were never up on the RPMs and run efficiently. They were always idling and lugging and polluting. And so we were required to change them out by 2026. You see the picture in the bottom left. That's when we're skidding it out. The only way to get out, because we didn't want to cut up the hotel house above it, but was to cut a hole in the side and skid it out through the side. We had to turn them and then slide them out. And that's how we put the replacement in. The center picture is the new 3512, smaller one. Got a little more room in there with that one. And so the projects we did on the Kennecott, a part of our modernizing, trying to keep them up, is we removed also both the waste heat boilers. We had a lot of wasted steel in the system on the bottom. and rebuilt both the port and main Wärtsilä engines. We did a complete blast on the hull, and I'll show you in the next pictures that project. We had a lot of steel to replace on the vehicle deck. And then we upgraded an automated system for the generators. So if one goes down, it automatically kicks on the other, so you don't have a blackout situation with the power going out. So it's called an Easy Gen system on there. And then we also took the opportunity to get about 80% of the Wi-Fi done on there. We have some of the room still to hook up, but we've got it all strung out during this shipyard. That work was done out at Puget Sound at Everett Shipyard. So here's just some visuals. The top one on the left, you can see the condition of the hull when it came out. There were no anodes on there. And then as I looked into it, this hull, since it was built in 98, had never been blasted and painted. It had always been deferred. You standardly do that every 10 years. So we had a lot of steel to replace here. We had some electrolysis issues, and we had a few inserts to cut out, or inserts to put in, cut out, rusted out steel that didn't have the required classification thickness, scantling thickness, and when you lose more than 25%, you have to replace it. So what we did is we blasted the whole hull, and normally, like I said, you do that every 10 years and give this a fresh start. So the bottom pictures, you can see what it looks like after we gave it. And really, that's the one thing that's protecting us from all the salt and the attack. And then we obviously had an electrolysis problem, not having any of the zincs, the anodes. That center picture there where you see the zincs on the rudder, that's we hired an electrolysis engineer to come down and lay out a new plan for the vessel. And then we do have an impress cathodic, a current cathodic protection system as well, an ICCP electrolysis one that can protect some areas. It can't protect it back and around the wheels, because that's like a big washing machine back there and it can't shoot through the air bubbles. That's why you need the old anodes back there to protect that part of it. So this boat now has another, you know, good 10 years of a nice coating on it. So
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It looks great. I have two questions. The first is, what do you use to blast? As I don't actually know. And the second is, what is the deferred maintenance, the maintenance plan going forward? So in 10 years, are we going to actually see it extended for another 10 years, and then 10 years after that, and find ourselves in a similar situation?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin. The this one here, they use sand. And it depends on what port you're working in. When I would do anything like in the port of Honolulu, I had to just do a water blast. So it depends on what you're in, how they clean it and what they allow, and they got to contain it all and dispose of it all. Going forward, we will always do a coatings inspection, and I like to have the paint suppliers come down, look at it. What do I have here? Is it going to last? You know, we do put the top coat on here for anti-fouling, so we try to keep the growth off that will just eat through that paint as well. So we come up and next year we look at it and it looks good, you know, and maybe we're just touching up the anti-fouling or putting a new anti-fouling coat on. And, you know, 10 years is kind of a standard that you're doing that. But if you maintain it well, and you're not in a high solidity area, or, you know, this areas like down the Gulf where you're going up the Mississippi and getting a sandblast just with the silt coming down the, that's, you can get a pretty good life. And we're in some good cold waters here that, you know, we should easily get 10 or more, and we can mechanically touch up areas where we need to. But it's all about staying after it every time you see it. So our next project is the Tazelina crew quarters. This year it's been quite the project. We did a lessons learned based on the Hubbard. It's taken a while to make some of to get this one to this point. Funding was changed from FHWA to FTA, which then changed the Buy America requirement from 70% to 100%. And there are some components that are pretty hard to get. So It's been a chore to get to this point. We followed behind and watched what we were doing on the TRV, and we were able to take a lot of the program management requirements the FDA had and apply it to this one. So they're right now targeting to have this out mid-April, and should be about a 60-day period for the bids on that one. And it'll be fun to get this one into service. This is the Columbia upgrades here. We want to keep the Columbia going until we have another mainline replacement. So we're putting all the effort in we can to keep it going for the next 8-9 years. And this is a long list. I won't run through all that, but this is a lot of the plans that we have, which what I call the capital projects that we're going to try to do. You know, the big one, we had to replace all the fire main on here over 750 feet, which was a major project here a couple of years ago that kept it out of service for a while. And now we have to update the fire systems on there at the different fire stations and bring them up. And then we want to modernize some of the accommodations. We've got some goals to add some electrical upgrades. Today, everybody wants to plug something in. When this is built, no one was plugging anything in but a hairdryer. So we will try to get that added. We do have some ADA upgrades. We got some asbestos abatement. And we do have a lot of windows to upgrade. We've had rust on the framing below the windows. So we do have some steel replacement in those. As we take them out, we'll have to cut and weld new framing around them. So there'll be a bit of a work, but then we'll get some good windows in those spaces. And just a lot of modernization of the accommodations is what we want to put forth.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see here that you have ADA compliance, and we have some advocates who are here in the building talking about adult changing tables. Is there conversations about how to make these truly accessible for all family styles?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin. That is not one I've seen on the list. You know, we do have requirements from our regulators, but I'll go back and look at that. But a lot of it has been more around the access to all levels within the vessel. But I'll definitely check on that one.
Follow up?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you'd like to see one, they just did the ribbon cutting this week, and it's on the ground floor here in the Capitol. So I know that there's folks who do use different transportation modalities to get to the Capitol. So it might be an interesting addition that is really inclusive of all the visitors who come into Juneau.
All right. Thank you. Sounds good. So you can see we got a bit to do on the Columbia anyway to keep it going. It did run last year for almost the full 12 months, and it did well. Here's our new Tustamina replacement vessel. This is out for bid now. Bids are due into May. This is a very efficient hull you see there. This is a rendering of it, but it's been through a computational fluid dynamic analysis, a CFD, to really take away any of the hard points, restrictive points, to make it as efficient as it can be through the water. And it's also been through tank model testing as well. And I've seen those processes take a knot and a half off a vessel and make it that much more efficient. So this will be a good hold for going forward.
Senator Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. So what do you envision the price tag?
I don't want the bidders to know, through the chair, Senator. I don't want the bidders to know. So, but
well, that's fair.
So, but it is an expensive vessel,
and a quick follow up. What's the fate of the Tustamina?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Rauscher. We are managing and babying that hole.
I see that,
and to keep it going, it's doing well. We really monitor the seas we go through. That one's got to make that run from Kodiak up, you know, coming across there, Shilkoff and some areas. So it's, we try to stay out of anything that's twisting that hole too much. It's had some past damage before my time, but when you look at where the welds have been, you know, every time you put a weld, that's another hard point. It just transfers it somewhere else in that hole. And so we're managing that to just keep this going. It's We didn't have too much steel to replace the shipyard. It's in the yard right now. It's on schedule. And it'll be good to get it back to work here in a bit. So.
And I have to leave for a second.
Okay. All right.
I'll be back.
The next slide is the our diesel electric hybrid. Back in 23, MHS was awarded a $46 million grant for a small electric ferry. We'd like to make it a diesel electric so we have some redundancy in it. We awarded it went out to bid and awarded the contract to Gloston for designing it. And we're working with the Southeast Conference on the shoreside power requirements for this, for shore power. And we anticipate this design completion to be done the end of the year, and then we can put that out for bid. And then this project here, I'm a little tight on resources, so when we get the Taslina bid out, the same engineer will get this one out. We were awarded a grant for design of a new mainliner, and we got $9 million just for the design, so we'll work on that so we have that done and on the shelf as we chase different funding opportunities. What this drawing here just shows, like a 410-footer, this is really the new TRV design. We just forward of the exhaust stack, we put a 80-foot section in there in the parallel mid-body section to show what a 410-footer would look like on a new build. So, and then on our long-range plan, if you haven't seen it, this is our fleet plan that's in the long-range plan. There's only two vessels in that are still here that will still be there in 2045, and that's the Hubbard and the Taslina, which will be approaching the end of their life at that time. But this is an eight-vessel fleet. We modeled this out through different built a program with the LFA Design Group where we ran different fleets through the model to see how we could cover the different communities and the number of port calls we would be able to do to make sure we'd get the best coverage. And this fleet here was able, which is interchangeable, all those day boats are on the far right, the Hubbard, the Taslina, and the new day boat, and they can all interchange and cover for each other. The two mainline vessels are ocean class, so we're not just having one boat that can run across the Gulf. Those two can cover for each other. They'll be sister vessels, and so we have some interchangeability there. And the same with the shuttle ferries. They can back up for each other when one of them's in the shipyard and cover, and we can take care of things that way. I will note too that in that modeling we ran, we paid attention to gross tonnage of the vessel, which is can drive your manning to make sure we could be as efficient as we could be on the cost side. And we also, modeled different vessels for fuel burn and operating costs. So that was all included in that analysis. This is our ferry terminals. And I'll just note that in the long-range plan, we do have upgrades to the terminals. We would like to put an Alaska-class ferry up in Prince William Sound, but we have to update the docks at Cordova, Tetlik, and Chinega to be able for them to call there, as we'll be retiring the Aurora that's up there now. And then in Southeast, we do have upgrades to make for the Alaska-class to make them easier to tie up at Auk Bay, Angoon, Cake, and that's it. And then, Pelican, only the Leconte can go to Pelican. And so we're going to change out the facility there so the other vessels can call it Pelican as well. And when the Leconte's out, Pelican doesn't see any ferry service. And then our third area of focus is the reliable workforce. And we've got some good things going on here, and it'll take a while to see the results of them, but we got to get started on them so we can see. We've got to focus on Alaskans here and trying to build and grow and develop the Alaska maritime workforce. I'll go through a hosepipe program. That's where you start at the bottom and you can work your way up. I'm a fan of that program. It's where I started. And then explore different retention. We've been trying to promote the in-state travel. We see this as a real game changer for us because it's difficult for people to find housing in Juneau and Ketchikan, where most of our crew changes take place. And if we had workers from the other communities, whether, you know, be Huna, Angoon, any of them, we'd love for them to stay in their community and then come work for us. But right now, if you're traveling, you know, from Angoon or Cake to Ketchikan to get on a boat and you've started out in the stewards, you've spent your check just to get to work. So we'd like to be doing what the rest of the industry does, and that's pay for the for travel to find your boat and get on it, because these are moving assets. And so that's a part of our program in here too. This here is a good visual of the Hosepiper program. I've been working with the DOT on this. Jocelyn Swindell and the DOT come up with this visual. It's great. And it's this way the mariner can see what's required. We can't list all the requirements. It won't fit on this visual, but in the booklet we have with this, it does list in each area what their requirements are and the training you have to have, the sea time you have to have to move to the next level. But this way they can set a goal and what they want to do and work towards it. So the one on the left is, if you start as an ordinary, here's what you got to do and to become a master. And then on the right, it's the path for the engineer, starting as a wiper and then moving up to be a chief engineer.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious about the origin of these names. I find it fascinating. Ordinary seaman, yeah. Able-bodied seaman, oiler. What is the origin of some of these terms that we use?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin. I don't think I can answer that one. But I do know I've had those, you know, ordinary seamen, able-bodied seamen. But I guess, the ordinary is the guy that comes on the boat that has no experience. He's just an ordinary guy, I guess. But then when you've sailed for, you know, and get your 1,080 days or whatever is required, and then you can sit for the test, now you're an able-bodied seaman. And they came up with that. It's a good question. I'll have to read that up on that someday.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to know, Bosun?
Yeah.
Bosun?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin. So the bosun is the next level up from, he's the naval body seaman, but he's the one that gets the duties to take care of some of the seamanship, on a ship that has to be done. Here, the bosun's the one that takes care of the loading, laying out the load. He'll walk, you know, and see what vehicles he has, what trucks, different things, and he'll lay out the load to get it on there, try to get the trim he needs and plan the load that way. But a lot of his loading, especially on the mainliner, is getting them set up in order that they got to drive off as they stop at the next ports. But that's what the bosun does on our vessels anyway.
I have a question, since we're at a little pause. In talking about in-state travel, I think it was slide 18, do you have that as a request in your budget for this year, or is that a dream?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Aspirational, maybe.
Yes, Senator Brockman. It has been an ask. It's even been an ask submitted through a LOA. Trying to get that in place. It hasn't been approved, but I do see it as something that will really improve our recruitment and retention. And the retention is a good one. We do see that we retain Alaska hires at a better percentage than we do out of state. And that just paying their travel from out of state is tough. And if they're not a licensed position that's drawing a better salary, it's pretty hard for them to afford that. But our problem is we have lost some that just because they can't find housing in Ketchikan or Juneau, and they find something else why they've been looking for housing and moved on. So this would be a great way to support Alaskans staying into this, into the maritime industry and working for us and staying in their local community.
Very good. Please continue.
So this is a good positive slide here. We've had a lot of good funding that's come available through the DOT on training. So the first area here is really kind of working with the maritime community in the state. This is the through the University of Alaska Fairbanks, the Maritime Workforce Partnership. And through that partnership, they've been going around and doing introduction to the maritime industry, been at career days for some of the high schools and been in the different communities. They've used our terminal in Ketchikan for one of the events. And as you can see here, we've reached over 500 students that have attended these events. We've had 40 that have now got credentials. So when they graduate, they're ready to go because there's a time frame to that. And so we help them, you know, give them direction on what they need to do to get that training, or not training, but it's a certificate. They need the Merchant Marine certificate, the MMC, and they also need a TWIC card, and then they can be ready to get on a vessel. And then they've got some required training on day one, but we have that in place through UAS as well and Ketchikan to give them the training that they need as far as basic training, crowd management, those types of things that the Coast Guard requires them to have as well. And then the second area, this is great. This is on our pathway where we had a gap, and that was moving from a certificated position like an AB or a oiler to a licensed position to be a third mate or a third assistant. And there's a cost to do, you know, to go to school. It's a time of cost of time where they'll be gone for 5 to 6 weeks without pay. And then also the tuition, and the tuition itself is, you know, close to $30,000. And so we want to be able to promote our own employees to be able to move up. And if you know, any industry, it shows as you progress your staff within your business or your company, they tend to stay. And so we want to be moving them on up. And then you can see here, we got enough funding to do 4 of these a year. And we just started this in this last fall. We got 2 ABs that have gone through it and now are third mates with us. And we got 1 oiler who's now a third assistant. So we hope to get 8 of them this year and just keep moving up the pathway there. The next one is the Maritime Institute Technology and Graduate Studies, MITAGS, in Seattle. That's a program where you can go in an apprenticeship program fresh out of high school and come out of there in 2 years with a third mate's license. And so this is a great program. We have one that just started this this month in Seattle. And so look forward to having him working for us in a couple of years as a third mate. And the last one's our pilotage incentive program. We got a new clause into the MMP contract where we can now give a partial pay while on their, if they'll ride on their time off and get their pilotage. And the next few slides I'll show, you know, where we're short and you'll see why we need these third mates riding and getting their pilotage. So there's a lot of good things going on in this area. None of these, you know, change the game today, but we got to get these started, and we'll see the results of this in the next few years.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious, particularly on the University of Alaska Fairbanks and potentially within the apprenticeship program, has there been conversations around maximizing the new workforce Pell to help get folks into these programs and get them supported, or perhaps also utilizing the changes that were made to the Alaska Performance Scholarship for career and technical education?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin, I'm not aware of that. So be good to know, because we're looking for everything we can get to help this program.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you have a great asset here in Senator Bjorkman, but I also would be happy to help walk you through some of the potential opportunities that are coming down the pipeline.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. This is a crewing status for 2025. We hired 67 and we had or 64 we hired, and we had 67 separations. And that could be retirements or anything else. And some of them was the way our system tracks it. Some of it is like the bullet points below. We did have, you know, we had the one oiler that moved up. That's one going out of the IBU engine. So he's one of the two that went out and he joined the MEBA. He's one of the new hires in the MEBA. But if you look back in 23, we had like a 40% retention. And this is a big improvement for us. And we saw in the second half of 2025 a real slowdown on the departures. And a lot of that was just tied to the new contracts in July. And from that point on, where there was a, they did get a raise and brings them a little bit closer to the market. We've saw that really slow down on the separations. So this breaks it down by position. This changes every week, but this is as of February. If you look at the fifth line down, third mate, you can see we've had good success here in 25 of hiring third mates right out of the academies. We have 24 extra third mates. These are the ones we're incentivizing to ride and get their pilotage. They come out of academy ready to go to work they got a master's license, but they got to get sea time to work at that. We needed them to get their pilotage, move on up. And you can see as you go to a second mate, we're short 12. You know, we're short 7 first mate, chief mates. So we need these to keep moving on up, because we lose them on the top end every year to Southeast pilots. And that's just the nature of it. Like I always say, we're really the farm school for the pilots. We're the only one that has pilotage for all these waters that the cruise ships need. So we've got to keep funding this and putting it, keep moving them up. On the engineers, you can see we're short 15 here. We've had some success this last year hiring some thirds. And like I said, we produced one of our own with an oiler moving up. So that's great. This has never been a no sell area for us because MEBA has such a strong, hiring hall, that we can just go to and they'll fill when we need. So, that agreement with the hiring hall has been very helpful there. And then the bottom second with the IBU, just a few years ago, we were short half a dozen ABs, and we were short half a dozen, oilers. And you can see we're full up. We started a program in late 23. We just hired extra wipers and started having them ride so we could fill the oiler positions. Cause in the 23, when I just started in the end of 23, we had a couple no sell days with lack of oilers. And so we made our own through that process, and we haven't had any no sell days with the lack of oilers now. The last area is promote financial efficiency and sustainability. And here it's really in making sure we have, you've seen what we've done in the design of the future fleet, where we've paid attention to every bit of the system as a whole, not looking at just this vessel, but at the system as a whole, how it all fits together to make sure we have a standardization, efficient size. You know, I think a good example is the newer Tazelina and Hubbard are 1,650 gross tons. If they would have just paid attention to that tonnage and been 1,599, it drives a different license. And so we want to pay attention to everything when we're designing that and making sure we're designing the most efficient fleet for the state going forward. The last item on here is key performance indicators. I don't have numbers to put here. 25 hasn't officially closed year for the year, but I will tell you in 24, we had a 25% farebox recovery rate. And in 25, it was down to 24%. So we've got inflationary costs hitting us every year. Since I've been here, we've never had a rate increase. And so that gap between our fare box recovery and the our cost keeps going up. In the long range plan, we recommended at a minimum that we do CPI adjustments annually just to stay with inflation. And we recommend the Anchorage CPI, the CPI urban Anchorage. And last year that rate was 2.1% for Anchorage. I did get approval for that May 1st. We will have a 2.1% increase. It's already in the system for people buying after May, and that'll help us not have that gap grow on us like it would. And we modeled that out with McKinley Resource Group when we were working the long-range plan. And if we said if we did nothing and inflation was like 2.4% for the next 20 years, that gap grew $90 million. So that's what the state would have to try to cover. So it's important that we just try to stay with inflation every year to keep this affordable. And then I think that's all I got. I'll turn this over to Dom. This here is really our long-range plan of why, you know, the benefits we get out of chasing and getting the financial efficiency and chasing these initiatives we have in the plan. So I'll turn this over to Dom to go through the financials and the budget.
For the record, Dom Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration. We've got a couple slides just speaking to the financial status and the budget requests this year. So for fiscal year 27, we're requesting what we call a waterfall model, and that is a multi-year fiscal year appropriation that gives the budget and our finances a little flexibility that allows surpluses. So if we don't spend all the money in our budget, it allows us to carry it forward before rolling over to the next year. The legislature continues to appropriate on an annual basis, 12 months of funding. It just provides flexibility between the years. The past 3 years, we have had funds that we could carry forward. So this, and in the current year, this is going to allow us to carry funds backwards, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. This plan is also supported by the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, and it also significantly reduces a lot of administrative burden and allows us to report our actuals in a timely manner to the Legislative Finance Division for legislators to have for consideration. Moving on to the next slide, this is our current year's budget, $170.7 million, and the budget was appropriated and built around a presumed federal grant, which was effectively $77.9 million. For the 3 years prior to this year's budget, we've received a large federal grant in roughly that amount. Last year, the notice of funding opportunity was never issued by the Federal Transit Administration. So that is a big revenue shortfall in the current year. As you can see, we do have roughly $90 million when you look at the UGF and the Marine Highway Fund revenue. So currently, right now, we're operating on those funds, the $90 million. If we can go to the next slide. With the $90 million we have, that's enough to cash flow the operation without modifying or changing our schedules or shutting down ships into July. And so we've all recognized that not receiving this fund is an issue. And 2 or 3 weeks ago, our commissioner and our legislative liaison did speak with the Federal Transit Administration. We're hoping, you know, they committed to issuing a notice of funding opportunity this month. So we are patiently waiting for that to come out. And then there was a commitment to hopefully have an award in September or August. And in doing that, if the waterfall model is funded, we would bridge the gap between July and August or September by using Marine Highway funds instead of the federal funds. And then we'd use the federal funds in the following year. So it just allows us to kind of swap the funding between the 2 years. So that's the advantage of that. They've also said they're going to potentially release the final $410 million of the program. So we'll also be looking to take advantage of that in the amount we request. So we'll request two operating years worth of funding and then potential other capital projects for the Marine Highway System.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And Mr. Pannone, what is the confidence level that we'll receive these funds in September or August? Is there an, I'm hoping it's 100%.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin, I'd say we have high confidence. We want to see that notice of funding opportunity come out this month. We've been successful in the prior 3 years. Alaska is a very strong candidate for this specific program. So we have a very high level of confidence. I don't think the confidence can ever be 100%, but we continue to work with our federal partners and advocate for this budget. Well,
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you contingency planning?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, yes, we are looking at other costs, cost-saving measures, and working with the legislature on what a contingency could look like. There's some we're working on. There's a typo in this slide. It's not the Malice Bean. It's actually the Matanuska. We're working on divesting that. That's currently a hotel ship in Ketchikan. We're looking at other cost-saving measures. The Teslina project we saw earlier, that's going to be that's also going to take costs off our operating budget. So in the event that a grant wouldn't materialize, we would still have the full next year's worth of funding, the unrestricted general funds, and we could continue to work with the legislature on resolving that. And that would all occur before we'd consider reducing the schedule or canceling any sailings.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that concludes my section, and I'll leave the final words to Director Torunga. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I have nothing else to add. So thank you for the time today to present where we're at.
Thank you, Director. We appreciate that. I have a couple of questions that are curiosities for me. I'm wondering about the number of routes and stops. I don't recall seeing anything like that in the presentation. So do we expect any additional routes to be added or restored or decline? Is there any change happening in this next year?
Yes. Senator Brockman, no changes this next year just because we're challenged on the crewing of an additional vessel to get some of the, especially the cross Gulf route. Now we are making a run cross Gulf the end of April before the Kennecott then swaps over to the Columbia. But that's in the future when we get these. I think there's some good information in the long range plan. We have it in three different stages. We have the short term where we're just kind of where I ran through today, what we're doing with the existing fleet to refurbish, getting started on designing the new fleet. And then we have the midterm where we're building a lot of those vessels. You'll see in the plan where, you know, we're calling on maybe having 4,500 port stops today. And then we get in the midterm, we're up in around 5,500. And then when the 2045 plan is out, we're actually doing over 6,000 port stops a day. And that's when we get all those stops back in. And we think of places like, especially Cake, is hard for us to cover. It's a long run out of Juneau. It takes the boat out for, you know, a 7-hour trip down, 7-hour back. When we get in the plan where we upgrade the terminal in Cake, where a mainliner can stop there, and in our new build mainliners, we paid attention to the speed of those. If we can get about 18 knots out of those boats as a service speed, not a max speed, that then we could stop at Cake and give them a weekly service that would get them to Juneau, where right now we get, you know, they get a round trip once a month. So it would greatly improve it, just that new plan, paying attention to the vessels, what that would do for improvement. And then same time, we got to get the dock set up so we can, you know, give them that service as well. So it's really in the midterm where we start seeing that. It's in 29, 28, where we start seeing some of the port calls improve. But that's all tied into being able to man these and have the funding to have, you know, 7-8 vessels running where we haven't had that today.
Understood. So what type of additional funds do you need in order to restore regular cross Gulf ferry service?
We need the funding for to operate the seventh boat year round, but we also need the manning, and we don't have that in place. And that's the hard part. You know, we could get a crew to do a couple weeks here and there, but really not enough to crew it full time. And we're losing captains again on that, or, you know, it's a vessel that can go forward and meets the SOLAS STCW requirements and takes a different certification. And, you know, we need more of those. That's the only boat that really maintains that on a regular basis.
And that's the Columbia?
No, Kennecott.
Kennecott.
Yeah. Sure. The Columbia is what we call coastal. It doesn't have an ocean endorsement. Can't go foreign.
Very good. Another popular route that I know a lot of Alaskans use is a route from Homer to Kodiak. That got reduced quite a while ago. Has there been any conversations about improving that?
Senator Barkman. Yes, actually, the service to there is it's gone pretty good the last couple of years. And we have been limited just for the reasons I was saying. We do manage the hole on that vessel. But I will say it is the busiest part of that route that the Tustamina does. And in our long-range plan, we actually have float docks in the plan going into Yakutat, so we don't have to wait for the Kennecott with a vehicle lift, that our new vessels, which are ocean class designed, then can call on there just like they can any other dock here in Southeast that's a float dock. And then we're also recommend a float dock in Homer and also in Kodiak, because then we could go back and forth without having to even use the vehicle lift. Because the new design, if you see the new Tustamina replacement vessel, we took put doors down in the bottom deck level so you can go alongside a port dock and drive right in, where you can't do that today on the Tustamina. So that just makes it more efficient and faster turnarounds. And so that's all in the plan. That's, you know, probably 10 years out before anything happens like that, or even longer, because Homer's doing their 10-year planning right now for their harbor. And we've just met with them, said, you know, we want to be a part of this with having a float dock as a part of that. And then we've got some ideas for Kodiak as well. But that way, when the Tustamina's out, then the new ocean class can actually call at those places as well, where they can't today because they don't have a vehicle lift. We want to get everything to a float that we can. We'll leave the ports down the Alaska Peninsula for the Tustamina and the TRV with the vehicle lift, because those are just sheet pile docks down there.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? All right. Director Torunga, Mr. Pannone, thank you very much for joining us today. That concludes our business here at Senate Transportation today. The committee will meet again next week, when we will hear on Tuesday, March 24th, House Bill 26, Statewide Public and Community Transit Plan, as well as Senate Bill 239, Motor Vehicle Registration. We'll also hear a presentation from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities about pavement, paving treatments, and asset management. We are adjourned at 2:35 p.m.